I swear these other podcasts are just a waste of time. I'm skipping through them, I'd rather listen and change my mind. Wes and Nick always help me through my daily grind. Your favorite guys, your favorite lines, change my mind. I swear these other podcasts are just a waste of time. I'm skipping through them, I'd rather listen and change my mind. Wes and Nick always help me through my daily grind. Your favorite guys, your favorite lines, change my mind.
Yeah. And welcome back to another edition of the Change My Mind podcast.
I won't change my mind because I don't have to, because I'm an American.
Yes, you are. And I'm Wesley Sykes. And through the other side of the ethers, the Gaia to my Talos is Mr. Nicholas J. Eskfryer, Super Skrull for hire.
So I'm the most overpowered character in the MCU now. Okay.
You're my child. That's what I was really trying to get back.
Oh, you're my daddy. Okay. Okay. Got it. So we could also say the Yankees to your Pedro.
That's true. Who is your daddy and what does he do?
But I am excited to talk about...
Kindergarten Cop reference.
Well, you know what? I didn't get that. I was going to say I'm excited to talk about this today, but like I'm middling.
Well, I'm more excited to get your opinion on the AI intro, which has been much maligned, and you've been very outspoken with. I hope you watched that for the review here. That was my one request. Good. I'm happy about that. And if you haven't already figured out, this week we're going to be discussing the 41st installment of the MCU storyline, Secret Invasion, starring Nick Fury, Ben Mendelsohn, and Emilia Clarke. Now streaming on Disney Plus. Well, you probably already know that.
But starring who? Who's the first person it's starring?
Did I say Nick Fury?
Yeah, you did. I didn't even notice until right now.
That was a dumb moment there. Samuel Jackson. That's a good catch.
Good on you, Samuel. That's how good you're doing.
Sometimes editors need editors, you know?
This is I feel that.
Extra set of eyes, you know, it's always nice to have. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so in honor of that, Nick, if you could wear another person's skin, you know, be another person, whose would it be?
If I could be another person, it would probably be Henry Cavill.
That's a good one. That's a good one.
That man seems to be able to do no wrong. And I mean, he's in some amazing roles. I mean, whatever's happened with, you know, his Superman and everything like that, he's still like, when you think of what Superman looks like, he very much does that. And then, also, I love The Witcher. I haven't finished the second half of the this third season, but that is out, and I'm excited to watch that final episode. But he's amazing as Geralt too. So and he's done other stuff too. But yeah, I would if I could be another person, it would probably be Henry Cavill.
Yeah, Tom Brady's up there for me. Henry Cavill's really good. Tom Brady's up there just for his total life accomplishments. I mean, you get to be a top tier athlete, dating supermodels, getting rumored to be with you know, all the top Hollywood celebrities and movers and shakers of the world, right?
Your favorite.
Yeah. Well, yeah. That's one way to put it. But yeah, you know, so that's, you're kind of getting the best of both worlds there. Brad Pitt's obviously up there. Ryan Gosling, I think, is great because he's like pretty anonymous for being an A-list celebrity.
Yeah.
You know, you don't really see him outside of movie roles or like stuff for his movies. See, he does a really good job at that. You know, like I respect
you
that.
You know what? Ryan Gosling would be a great one too, because of all the people, if you're going to have to impersonate them. Now, obviously we saw The Machine and everything, where it kind of makes easier when you get to take in this information that they know and their personality and all that stuff. Gosling's still the easiest one of the ones we've talked about to impersonate, because while Brad Pitt can be a man of few words, no one does more with fewer words than Ryan Gosling.
Yeah, it's all body language and looks. And if you just have to shift the eyebrow real quick, you know, that's good for me, for a nice lazy man there.
I just tried to do the, what was that? The Crazy Stupid Love. I just tried to do that gif from that. It was a big miss.
Oh, I think I know what you're talking about there. Is that when he gets offended? Yeah. I think he's offended by what Steve Carell is saying to him or wearing. Yeah.
I need the scroll machine to get that one done. That's bad.
Yeah, there we go. Well, that's something to work on there. You know, I guess Leo DiCaprio is always up there, but he's getting up there in age, so I'm not sure.
Yeah, at least Gosling's
a little more vril.
Gosling's up there in age, surprisingly. Like, I think he's in his 50s, if I'm not mistaken.
Is he? Is he really?
Or is he? No, I think because he's
no,
like,
he'd be like Justin Timberlake's age. I feel like they were
in
Disney Club, Mickey Mouse Club together.
He's got like 10 years on Margot Robbie. Margot Robbie's not
older though.
Yeah. But like him and Cavill are on the younger side of things. Like Brady in his prime makes more sense and then Pitt. But at the same time, like if you're Tom Brady now, realistically, you don't have to do anything.
Yeah, that and but you're still living off all of his past accomplishments, so you don't really have to suffer through getting beat up by 300-pound linemen. I like where your head's at, Nick. Mm-hmm. That's my final answer. Him or Ryan Gosling. Actually, I'm still torn. Ryan Gosling doesn't have to get hit either, and he's still doing pretty good.
They're good options.
All right. Speaking of options here, let's shift gears.
Damn, son, where'd you find this?
Found this all over the internet this morning. This was a nice little treat to wake up to. But new things that we're getting here. Loki season 2 trailer was released Monday morning. Hits Disney Plus on October 6th. Pretty quickly, actually. So I amidst the writer's strike and everything that's kind of going on with the actors and everything else, I feel like this has just kind of slipped underneath the radar. Because we had, obviously, Secret Invasion, which we just finished up. And we knew Echo was going to be released all at once. I think I think before Loki season 2 or maybe November. I don't know. I'm kind of screwing up the dates here, but either way, I knew those two dates were coming. This one I felt like was more farther off, and it's not.
Yeah. This is going to be big for Disney. These next two shows that they have, because we have Ahsoka before Loki, obviously in the Star Wars universe, and everybody's very excited for that. And then we got this, and yeah, like you said, the trailer is out now. This is very promising. And I am definitely lower on the first season of Loki than most. I still thought it was good. And when you look at its impact on the larger MCU, it's undeniable that Loki had the greatest impact. So to that end, it's accomplished the most. I am very excited to see what this does, because it looks like Loki's going to be doing a whole lot. Obviously, there's a lot going on with Kang, but there's potential to set up a lot and really and fix some things if they want to fix some things, and mess with some stuff if they want to do that too.
Yeah, this looks very weird. And again, kind of like everything's kind of screwed up now. If you go back to the last episode of Loki there, season 1, where all the timelines are getting kind of warped, that's kind of the start of the inversion?
No. Oh, what was it?
Yeah, but you know what I'm talking about. That whole thing is going on, where you have the multiverses kind of combining into one. I thought it was Convergence. Maybe Convergence.
There we go. You said Conversion before. I was right around it.
So yes, they're all converging together, and you're seeing like almost like a across the Spider-Verse kind of glitchy thing that's going on there. You know, like you're seeing Loki kind of like, this isn't supposed to happen in the TVA, but it is happening, and everyone's kind of glitching there. So it looks like he's going between and kind of hopping between different timelines, which actually almost seems kind of similar in a way to what the Marvels are doing. You know, they're going to be shifting bodies and places and powers, but this is like shifting timelines here. So, you know, all the familiar people are back there. Ramona, Renslayer. You have Sylvie, who's back, who looks like she's working at a McDonald's in that. She looks very different. I almost didn't recognize her in the trailer. Was that just me?
I think I recognized her, but it took a second. But like, I forgot that she was there until you brought her up just in this moment.
And we have our favorite little sidekick there from Indiana Jones making his debut. I forget the actor's name, but he won an Oscar this year. Qui-Hon or something like that. And anything I say to make up to get close to is just going to sound offensive. So I'm not even going to attempt that. But he's in this.
Kwan.
What was it?
Ki Hui Kwan.
There we go. So yeah, again, right around it, but you know, with my white American accent, trying to pronounce that, it's just going to sound bad no matter what.
I definitely got it wrong to short round.
but he's in it. And so you see him kind of being playful with Owen Wilson's Mobius character, who I'm excited is back into the fold, and they're going to be going back in time to like 1920s era type stuff to find the one named Victor Timely. Which seems interesting there. And almost the whole stuff with Jonathan Majors seems to be casting like a little bit, not a dark cloud, but it's like a little bit of a damper over it. So I wasn't as excited to see it, not really knowing his status.
Yeah, this is like the whole situation is, and it's like I haven't I can't remember the last update that we got.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. It's kind of in limbo right now.
Yeah, that's so I don't like when I watched this, like I kind of forgot that mm-hmm. he was in it till we saw like the statue of him. I think it was an Egyptian statue.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. But like once I was like, oh, okay, so they're going forward with this, but they have options. They have ways that they can do stuff and get creative where maybe they can maneuver it. But I still don't know like how they're going to pivot out of this other than like, unless things work out where Jonathan Majors is proven not guilty or whatever the legal term will be in this instance, or do they recast? It's one or the other. Like, I don't see how you can do this and not have Kang still be the guy to finish mm-hmm. out whatever plan you had for him.
I'm with you, but on your takes, especially when we're referring to legalese, you got to come correct as our resident Esquire. You know, you can't be like not guilty or whatever the phrase is.
This is true. This is. I'm just putting it. I'm protecting myself legally to know that to let everybody know I don't know the correct terminology.
Well, yeah, so that's you are more familiar in bird law, though. So that's you know, this isn't exactly your specialty. That's an It's Always Sunny reference. I know you don't watch the show, but I appreciate it nonetheless.
I've gotten like over the cringe stuff a lot more. So I'm gonna make a point to watch that at some point.
It gets really good seasons like 4 through 8. That's like it hits its really nice sweet spot there.
Okay.
But nevertheless, Loki season 2 hitting our sweet spots October 6th. How about that?
Damn, son, where'd you find this?
All right, so we've touched on the writer's strike, the actor's strike a little bit here. Sony has announced some date changes that are coinciding with these strikes. We have the Madam Web project. It's been moved up 2 days from February 16th of next year, 2024, to the 14th Valentine's Day. This is kind of a big loss here. Spider-Man Beyond the Universe, which was scheduled for March 29th of next year, 2024, to TBA. Just no date inside. And the writing was on the wall kind of shortly after this movie or Across the Spider-Verse was released. So, you know, this is not really a huge surprise, but a little bit of a letdown.
Yeah, that one is you know, it's not surprising, though. It's like you said, it makes sense because there's the writer's strike. And then on top of it, we heard from actors right after. It was like, we haven't done shit for this.
Oh yeah, and even the creators, the animators, were saying how overworked they were at the time to kind of get this all in, and then having the space to be able to put out something quality to kind of put a nice bow on this whole trilogy is will be nice there. So as disappointing as it is, I'm okay with it.
Yeah, and whatever they're asking for, again, like I've said this like with a writer's strike, but it's like especially with Beyond the Spider-Verse, it's been doing very well. Like when I think about the movies that we've reviewed, the only ones that have like jammed the theater that I've been to in the past, I mean, ever since I moved up to Nashville, it was Mario and it was Spider-Verse. And then it was Barbie. I know we're not doing a review on that, but those are the mm-hmm. only three where I've just seen the place absolutely packed to the gills. So it's worth it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's showing it right there. Kraven the Hunter was supposed to come out October 6th, the same date as the first episode of Loki season 2. But now it's going back to August 30th of next year. So we got to wait, you know, another year for that movie, which is, I thought we already got a trailer for. So I thought that movie was already done. I'm not sure why that's getting pushed back.
It's got to be because of the strike only. I say strike only, but it's probably the result of the Spider-Verse delays, too. So between the two, like you're not going to have, you know, you're not going to have content, a whole lot of content or you know, maybe none at all. And mm-hmm. then you lose Spider-Verse, which is probably going to be a summer movie. Now you have to slide this in
there. Oh, I see. That makes sense then. Yeah. I gotcha.
It's the only reason I could think of.
Yeah, that I can. Yeah, because I know you can release movies and actors just aren't allowed to talk about the film.
Right.
You know, right. So there's just they're that. On strike too. But like, yeah, so that makes sense, though, with what you're saying.
The only other thing would be if they need to do massive reshoots, but that just doesn't make sense in this. The way things are laid out.
Yeah. Although that wouldn't surprise me. This Sony Spider-Verse has not lived up to, well, I'm not sure if there's really any expectations. It just hasn't been good. We have Ghostbusters Afterlife sequel that was supposed to come out of December 20th of this year to March 29th of next year. And then Venom 3, actually, they announced a release date of July 12th of next year.
So there goes all my logic that I was just saying. It's going to come out on July 12th. What if that's coming out July 12th of next year? Why is Kraven the Hunter getting pushed back to August?
I think that's a bit of a lie, the Venom 3, because I don't think that they don't even have a title yet. They haven't. I'm not even sure if they've like have a story or anything. So that seems like too close of a period to kind of like, this kind of feels like, oh yeah, we're going to be doing Fantastic Four. Stick around for 5 years.
That's fair. That's fair.
You know, maybe, I don't know. Maybe they just got to like, they just want to get some positive buzz that will eventually get pushed back later.
Okay. That makes sense. I feel better too about my take before. Thank you.
There we go. So we're keeping everything intact here. That's what's important.
Yes.
And one last note here, as again, the news is a little bit light as we're in the dog days of summer, as they say, and we got this strike going on here, which is striking me out for content to find during the week.
Damn, son, where'd you find this?
Might be striking out Rolling Stone magazine as well, because they made waves on Twitter Monday, and maybe I'm just online way too much here, but it re-released its top 50 comic book movies of all time from 2022. And Twitter users have said for a short period of time, apparently, that Zack Snyder's Justice League was ranked number one before the editors found like an error or something and changed it to number 50. A big, big error there.
Yeah.
From first to last. And now Black Panther is the top spot at number one.
I'm curious if Black Panther was weird. I wonder if Black Panther was 50, because if Black Panther was 50, then I can see that actually being like a legitimate mistake, where it's just as simple as we accidentally started with one and that was 50.
Yeah, dumb mistake either way, but at least that's kind of, you can understand that a little bit more there. But this whole story was very weird to me. I saw it online, Goo put it on our chat later that afternoon, and I was like, do you get this? I don't know what it's about, because I clicked on the story when I was looking for like news items like today, because it's slow news day, and it was like, this story is from 2022. Like, I don't get what people are making a big deal out of it is. But
either
way, Zack Snyder's Justice League, probably not 50 and probably not number one. So that's, you know, it's probably somewhere in between, at least for me.
Yeah. No, I was going to say, when you said, I thought you were going to say it's not in your top 50, because it's still in my top 50. I just don't know where, because we did the rankings a while back.
We did.
But I don't remember where I had it, but number one. When I saw that, I was like, how is that number one on anybody's list?
Now, I almost respect the level of troll if they just kept it that way.
That would have been something, but
you know, like sometimes maybe Barstool does this, but they'll put out like the best athlete, you know, the best running backs of all time. And then it'll be like four good choices. And then like two, like no names. It'll be like Jonas Gray or like Ben Jarvis Green Ellis. And then, you know, they're just doing it to incite the argument and like get the content. Like, these guys don't know ball. So I wonder if it's that sort of thing. Like, any sort of news is good news. Let's just get the clicks and put it out there. So if they did that, I would have been, I would have applauded them a little bit more.
Yeah. But I think this is just an error. Like, maybe, I don't know if it's a software error or a laziness error. That's what it comes down to. I don't know.
It's definitely an error. You know, maybe would AI make this mistake, Nick?
Well, that's why I'm wondering, was it the software that made it? Cause if the software made it, then yes, I would think so. But this is why you need editors, whether or not it's AI. You always need editors. But
yes, pay the editors, huh? The writers are getting the writers are on strike. We're the editors of Hollywood.
Yeah, I'm sure.
That's an underserved community. That's all I'm saying.
Well, I think if you watch Secret Invasion, some people would say maybe not.
All right. Yeah, that's true there. That's a good point. All right. So we've been streaming on Twitter here for the first, about 20 minutes or so as a crow flies. Before we head over to the comic book minute, I'm going to kill this Twitter stream here. So say bye to Twitter, Nick, and come follow us on our YouTube page at CMM Podcast. Check us out for the rest of the episode, the main segment, the Secret Invasion Exit Survey here, and as well as Nick's comic book minute.
Ah, a superb choice.
Okay, so we got some cool stuff coming out this week, but I wanted to highlight something that actually came out last week. So we do have the first issue of a Magneto story, just labeled Magneto. It seems to be in a different era than what the X-Men are in right now, where he's actually going to be filling in at Xavier School. Something that I'm going to be checking out, plan to talk about it on TLDR this week during the August solicit. But something that's more important that actually came out last week, I don't usually do this and circle back like this, but we had the Hellfire Gala. This is the third one that we've had. These have started happening during the Krakoan X-Men era. And every time they happen, some crazy shit goes down. And this was no exception. Oh my God, it was fucking crazy. This is an overloaded issue. I'm sure if you go to your local comic book shop, you'll still be able to pick one of these up. I'm going to get a little spoilery really quick here. So if you haven't read that yet and you plan to, just mute me for a second or whatever, or fast forward like 15 seconds. almost everybody fucking dies in this thing, Wes. So many characters in at the hands of fucking Charles Xavier himself. Accidentally, too. The way it's all done is so cool. He's
very interesting.
Put into a corner. And this is all like in Krakoa, they have figured out like how to revive mutants. So, well, not revive. They have their consciousness saved away essentially on a hard drive. And then they bring those characters back to life. And it's just basically at the last checkpoint. So it's kind of like video games and stuff like that. So it's like, is that person still alive? Or are they not? It's kind
of
weird.
That sounds like transhumanism to me. It sounds like the Mark of the Beast. I'm not a fan of it.
So yeah, so there's that. But then still he gets put into a corner because of what they kind of, because of these, the Mr. Sinister, MODOK, Moira McTaggart, all these characters go at Charles Xavier in the mutants. And it's like, we've known there's going to be like this demise of the mutants and all this, but it's always been a different thing. And again, you can travel back in time or you can revive people. But in this case, no, they're fucked. There's like a very small amount of mutants still left on the on Earth after this, the Hellfire Gala. And I'm just like blown away because there were so many other big hits throughout the course of the issue. But the final one with Xavier is just like, fuck.
Well, you know what they say, you either die a hero or live long enough to see yourself become the villain, right?
Yep.
I love it. Very interesting stuff from the comic book minute here. That is what the Hellfire Gala?
Yes, the 2023 Hellfire Gala.
Very interesting. I shared an interesting note with you in the group chat a couple days ago about the early beginnings of the Hellfire Club.
Yes, this is
very
true.
Interesting stuff. So, of course, he's Hell Friar, but it goes back to a group of friars who got together and practiced alchemy. Pretty interesting stuff there. So that's where the D&D references come from. But Hellfire, group of friars, it's all meant to be.
It's all there together. I may as well just get it tattooed across my chest.
You should, or maybe you get the Tupac Shakur tattoo where it's just kind of like going over your belly button. Like just like underneath your rib cage.
There you go. Yeah, that'll look good.
You can think about it. Yeah,
I'll think about it. You know what? I'll think about it.
Yeah, that's all I can ask at this point. I wish I had a cool sounder for Secret Invasion. I was gonna do it, but I just got wrapped up with work today, so I forgot. So we're just gonna shift gears here into our main topic to talk Secret Invasion: The Exit Survey, 6-episode series on Disney Plus. Nick, what is the synopsis?
Fury and Talos try to stop the Skrulls who have infiltrated the highest spheres of the Marvel Universe.
Yes, and this was created by Kyle Bradstreet. And I think the preeminent director was Ali Salim, I think is his name. Starring Samuel L. Jackson as Nick Fury. Not Nick Fury as Samuel L. Jackson, as I said earlier. It could be, though. Yeah. Emilia Clarke as Gaia. Ben Mendelsohn as Talos. Don Cheadle as James Rhodes. A little different James Rhodes this time around. I'm not sure about that. No. We have Kingsley Ben-Adir as Gravik, who makes a very strong performance as this, as does Olivia Colman playing Sonya Fallsworth, as does Charlaine Woodard, who playing Priscilla or Vera through this series. A lot of good performances here. Colby Smulder makes an appearance as Maria Hill. We have Dermot Mulroney as President Ritson. Christopher McDonald, a.k.a. Shooter McGavin, as Chris Stearns, the Tucker Carlson-like media figurehead. Samuel Adewunmi as Beta, one of the sidekicks of the Skrulls there and of Gravik, as well as Killian Scott's Pagan, who was interesting because he was following a false god and then ends up dying.
This is true.
And his name's Pagan.
As for the critics reception, of course, there's no box office in this because it's a show. Received a 6.2 out of 10 on IMDb, as well as a 56-58 split on Rotten Tomatoes, where it also has like the lowest rated MCU episode or pieces of content ever. The final episode got was a 5%. Is that right?
Yeah, something like that. And I think like the four of the six episodes are some of the like the lowest rated content just in general, aside from episode six, just in the MCU.
I think there was a lot of 50s and 30s, no 40s. It was wild. 3.1 out of 5 from Google reviews, and 72% of Google users like this show.
Yes, and we have a score and tweet length review. I'm going to go first. I'll give this an 81 out of 100. Secret Invasion did a lot of the things that I've missed from the MCU in recent years, months. And did enough to keep me invested throughout the series. Ultimately, though, the series falters where many other Disney plus MCU shows have. That's a CGI mishmash finale fight and too clean of an ending that felt rushed.
Yeah, we're in a pretty similar boat here. I actually gave it a slightly lower score, 80 out of 100, but we're living in the same building, maybe even on the same floor. Very easy show to binge because that is what I did. Ending was a bit rushed, though. It's what everybody's been talking about, and I tend to agree with this. Still, this has the ability to impact the MCU for a long time.
Yeah, absolutely. So that gives us a combined CMMCU score of 80.5 here, which let me scroll down. That is going, we're going to go into the
scroll
second
down,
page
look at
here.
You.
Oh, wow. I didn't even mean to do that. That puts it 32nd out of 41 properties, just behind Thor Love and Thunder with 82.5, and just ahead of Avengers Age of Ultron. And that feels right to me. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know about you.
Yeah. No, this feels like it was solid. You know, I mean, let's get into the exit survey questions, because I feel like I'm going to start dipping my toes into this accidentally.
Well, before we do that, so we obviously don't agree with the overall critics reception, with how poorly it was received here. And I just want to hear your thought, because my initial thought was like, and I felt like the general consensus leading into the show is that everyone was looking for a spy political thriller type show, that as this was billed as, with like a la Winter Soldier, a la Falcon and the Winter Soldier, that sort of thing. And by and large, I thought we got that. Now, whether that was to the degree that everyone wanted or not, this was largely a political spy thriller show, which I think is kind of slower just in nature to what goes on. So I'm kind of surprised by people saying how boring it was. This was, in a lot of ways, how it was billed with the outside, with the exception of the title, right?
Right.
It's not really the secret, but as everything being a political spy thriller, I think that lived up to.
Yeah, I do agree with you. I mean, if they had landed the final episode better, and look, I don't agree with the 5% on Rotten Tomatoes. I think that's absolutely insane. But had it been better, this probably would have been like, I would say trending towards like an 85 for me, something to that level. It was good. Like, I binged it, so it was a little bit different. I could see how people would say week to week, maybe it would be a little more for them. But this is also where maybe it's different, Wes, and like having a show, something like this as a movie instead. And I know you kind of wanted to talk about that in some capacity too. You said a while back, like maybe because of the nature of the story, maybe that would have been, it would have fit better, because then it doesn't feel as slow because you can't have any fat. And I don't think this had a whole lot of fat on it, if we're being honest.
No, and especially towards the back end of the season there, for
yeah,
sure.
No, I mean, it's almost like you needed it a little bit more.
Yeah. A little more cushion for the pushing in the back end.
Yeah. So it was, wow. Yeah. yeah. So, but it's, so that was, so I don't agree with, but I still don't think like this wasn't bad. It was just, it was solid. Like my definition of fine is between like, is like anywhere from like an 80 to a 75. And I thought like this was fine throughout. And then the ending was like, I thought it was better than fine throughout. And then the ending was like meh. So it's like, that's where I meet in the middle.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely here. So yeah, let's hop right in, because this does kind of roll into our first question here. Did the series live up to your expectations?
It's a little bit tougher to say. I'm probably where I know you are, which is like just shy.
Yeah.
Like I thought it was like, it was kind of trending to exceed it. And then it's just like the ending, just like, well, wait, like it was just too fast. And as much as I'm not bothered by using all the CGI at the end, because some of it I thought was very good. I don't think it was poorly done.
Yeah, and the content, the topic that they were using, you know, everything that they were pulling from, the idea was a great idea. And yep. I'm kind of living with just like the CGI limitations that Disney Plus has. Like, it is what it is.
So I think that like from going into it, I would say it was like right around my expectations. But as I was watching the show, the way it ended, I would say in that regard, it fell a little flat, came up short.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, again, this just fell just shy of my expectations for a lot of the reasons you just hit on, specifically the ending and just the crash landing of the season, that it is what it was, just so rushed. And you kind of got a lot of things that are kind of dangling out there, which maybe get cleaned up in you know, sequels or follow-ups and stuff. But what I really liked about this was, again, the political spy thriller and then having to be intently watching something. So I think for a while, particularly with the MCU shows, it hasn't been like eyes glued to the screen, have to be watching for clues or hints or red herrings and things like that, or watching any of like the companion YouTube content that breaks everything down to be able to find, again, Easter eggs or little things like that. Like Miss Marvel, She-Hulk, some of those other shows. I think even Moon Knight to a degree. Like, I found myself just scrolling through my phone and just like, I didn't really have to watch to get everything. You know what I mean? But this, there's a lot of little things that get tells within the conversations or the backgrounds, specifically when you're talking about the Harvest and the Super Scroll antidote. You're looking on the computer screen. You're like, what are those superheroes DNA that they have there? And you're trying to stop the screen right away so you can see it on the computer. You know, stuff like that, I feel like has been missing from a lot of the MCU shows, which I liked getting back to.
Yeah, there was a lot good to it, but at the same time, there was just, you know, like we said, it just fell a little short.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, okay, so where does this rank in your post-Endgame rankings?
I was looking at your notes and I was trying to do the math on mine. It's actually like towards the bottom. Like, so our list, it's 14th out of 17.
Right.
But for me, based on all my rankings, it is it's like the second lowest after Eternals. So, and I feel like fine with that. Like, I like most of the stuff post Endgame more than most people do.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And this is 8th out of 17 for me. But like I said, 14th out of 7, which is just crazy in general that we've had 17 properties since Endgame. It doesn't feel like that because everything has been kind of like meh, kind of middle of the ground. There's not a whole lot that you can kind of really like sink your teeth into that. And I think that's movies and content in general, or the TV in general. But yeah, I thought this was good. Again, it did some very interesting things. I love the performances by the majority of the cast. I think that's where the most of the money went into, just paying this big cast that you had. And I think that ultimately paid off. But there was, again, so you have questions about Rhodey. There's questions about overpoweredness or CGI questions. There's a whole Rush story for, I'm not a comic book reader. I imagine that you've read Secret Invasion. That series, have you read that?
No, I never read Secret Invasion.
Oh, well, I mean, but then you're well aware of just the impact that it's had, yes, and
course,
how
course.
It was a huge kind of comic book moment, absolutely, there. And then for it to not, you know, that doesn't affect me, but I can certainly understand people being upset by kind of just like bastardizing the name and kind of using the name for attention.
Yeah, 100%. And like, for me personally too, it's just like, this is like, it's like, there's a lot of stuff that's good about it, but this does happen sometimes where it's like, I like Nick Fury and I thought he did a great job. But like beyond him, there were good performances, but it's like, I don't know. I guess it's just characters that I'm not in any capacity, like, familiar with, where maybe this goes up a couple points if like I'm more familiar with some of them. It's not, I'm not going to take a huge knock on that, cause that's not really fair. But it's just like, that's another thing that maybe like puts this behind a couple other shows or movies that have come out post Endgame.
All right, then let's get into the nitty gritty. We've been kind of dealing with the abstract, the big picture here, but let's go small picture on the small screen. What was the most rewatchable scene of the series for you?
I honestly, that massacre at the end of, I believe, the first episode where Maria Hill died.
Oh, the blowing up of the Russian embassy there, right?
Yeah.
That
was intense, man. That was crazy. I mean, that was one of the, that was wild.
And that's a good pull. And that's probably the benefit of you getting to binge this, because that feels so far removed from my mind there. When I saw that on your list, I was like, oh, that's a good call. Yes.
No,
you go ahead. It's more fresh in your mind.
Well, it's the thing that for me was biggest, Wes, is like, as I'm watching every single episode, because they're flashing back to it here and there and stuff, I'm like, are they going to bring her back? Are they going to find a way to do it? Like, it's just because, A, you got the Skrulls involved, and B, like, it's comics. Like, anybody can come back, but we didn't see her at all.
No. I think we saw the body there. You know, we saw the cold body there. So I think she might be gone.
Yep.
And I think even Colby Smulders had said some quotes about that too, about her kind of ending her time in the MCU there. I'm with you. I think that's great. It kind of sets the stage very well of this kind of cat and mouse game where Gravik seems like kind of one step ahead of Nick Fury, and Fury's really being established as like a guy who's over the hill, kind of past his prime. So it's interesting, and you're wondering how that's going to come back to bite him in the ass with Gravik posing as Fury to kill Maria Hill there. And of course it does. So at least that got paid off.
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree with you. And the other big one, the other big fight piece scene, this is kind of the real big set piece, is the Russian attack on the U.S. president with the Skrulls. Thought that was very cool. A little sloppy in its execution there. You would think if you had Rhodey on your side protecting the president that he would have the War Machine technology with him. But he doesn't use that. In fact, they actually make an interesting cut to him when he's sitting in the car while all that's going on. He kind of just like looks away, which I think is pretty telling, right? If you didn't know at that point or start questioning, you know, what Rhodey's deal was, that's a good telling point.
Yep.
I just mentioned this too, discovering the first powers of the Super Skrulls on the computer. That's like classic MCU Easter egg stuff that I loved. You know, and you're like, oh my God, we have Groot here. We have Corvus Clay, but we have Call Obsidian. We have the Extremis and the last one that I'm blanking on there, but there was another one that was right there. And you're like, oh man, how are they going to use this? How is this all going to kind of come to fruition here? And there was some really cool uses of the powers, particularly with Groot and the Extremis in particular that I liked.
Yeah. They had the Groot stuff was actually insane. You know, it's funny as you say that. It's like I forgot they mentioned him, and it's like, no, we very visibly see the Groot, because that's what happens with Pagan.
Yeah, it happens with Pagan, and then it happens with the attack on the president there and the Russian attack. So, and the Russian attack is great too, because you get to see the Extremis to some of the best use there. Gravik, I mean, you see him kind of stabbing his hand or getting his hand stabbed, then pulling it through. Very cool use of that power. And then again, getting his face blown off and it just kind of coming right back and you're kind of seeing that hole through his face.
Right.
Very cool. And again, I was saying this to Mac when we did kind of a season finale preview on the Mac and Goo program. This is some of the more violent adult themed content that we've gotten probably since US Agent, you know, killing a bystander, a villain with the Captain America shield.
Yeah, no, this was I like this show. Like, it needs the elements of this show. There's a lot of good in here. There's some really good writing too, as much as the ending was a little bit rushed. It's just like, you know, there are flaws where in this could have been better, but there are some really strong points to it. I think that is a good one to hit on.
Yeah, and you mentioned the writing here. A couple of honorable mentions. I don't think this is worthy of the top spot, but Fury and Vera talking at the table, at the dinner table, episode 5, episode 4, something like that. Really good back and forth as they're quoting her favorite poetry and kind of coming to the grips that she's been working for, she's been a Skrull working for Gravik all this time, and it's that kind of betrayal that's been going on, while also her, you know, they're both expressing love for one another, but they're also problems with one another too, with Fury being snapped and them being so distant literally space on the Saber space site or whatever that is. So I thought that was really well done and one of the stronger points of the season. And then you touched on this, the Gravik handling the internal uprising there, right, against Pagan. Yeah. And just him going nuts, slitting the guy's throat and just literally, who wants some? Who wants a piece of this? Yeah. Come get some.
Yeah, that was actually
really fun.
The acting, Why am I blanking on his
Kingsley Benadire?
Kingsley Benadire was outstanding, but also the writing was outstanding with that character too. Mm-hmm. Like, there's so many times where we see these like leaders that are very aggressive and very toxic in some ways, and it's like they're still gonna watch out for their own. They'll discipline one person, but then they'll stop. They kind of end there. Just they want to scare the people. Sometimes they are unhinged, and mm-hmm. I want to see that here and there, and we get that with this character. And he was really good. Like, he's a villain that looks like we're not gonna ever see again, but it's a shame.
I hope that I have an unanswerable question almost out of hope. Mm. But yeah, I agree. I feel like this is one of the more formidable villains that we've had, especially on the TV show platform in a while. And like you said, like, we've had the High Evolutionary, we've had He Who Remains, we have Kang the Conqueror. All these guys have been calculated and measured and like move like pieces on a chessboard. And certainly Gravik has some of that to him, but there was also, again, that bit of like wild, untamable rage that yep. came out there, which I thought was nice.
Yes.
Nice to see. Nice change of
pace.
So
when I say that there are characters who I don't really know here that I don't care about, like with him, it didn't matter.
Yeah. You buy him pretty quickly too.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. All right. So we're in the unanswerable questions portion here. I feel like this could be pretty deep here. What do you got?
Well, the one I think that comes out of the finale is, can anybody beat Gaia now?
Yeah, she's almost too overpowered. It's like, how do they use her? I feel like that's like kind of, those questions go hand in hand now. I mean, you saw them kind of nerf Thor and Captain Marvel and, like, you know, Thanos a little bit in the second and Endgame there. But albeit you didn't have the Infinity Gauntlet. But, you know, nevertheless, like, it feels like they're going to have to nerf her a little bit.
I would think they'll be like, oh, the body, even the Skrull body can't contain all of these powers. Like, it wasn't meant to do that, blah, blah, blah. Like, something like that will probably be the explanation. Like, it'll start like wear and tear on her because it's like too much.
Yeah. Or maybe she can be stripped of it at a certain point, you know, it can be extracted. Maybe. Like, I don't know. You can lose it. I don't know if that works once it's in your DNA, but you know, maybe there's something there.
But in this state, she's not losing a fight.
Right. No. Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Yeah.
How long has Rhodey and Martin Freeman been Skrulls? This has kind of been answered, but
yeah,
I'm not sure if I believe it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I mean, in this, to that end, too, my follow-up to that is, can anybody in the MCU be trusted?
Yeah, and this is where I like where the show kind of leaves the MCU off is in kind of this paranoid, schizophrenic type of world where you have to be looking over your shoulder, or you have to be wary of everyone now because you're not really sure. There's a million Skrulls walking among us, and they've all been outed.
A right? million?
So, yeah, yeah. So I think that leads to, like, again, a lot of cool ideas. So I think that's a very interesting question. But with the Rhodey stuff, the director said Captain America Civil War. That's what he was alluding to. With him being without the braces, still paralyzed in the hospital gown. So that means, like, there's a lot that, you know, if you go back and watch the old movies there, that doesn't really make sense. It doesn't really add up. But I think going forward, it creates an interesting dynamic or character element for Rhodey.
Yeah,
I think it ruins a lot of his early foundation, but
yeah, there's a lot with this past that I'm like curious about, and I will say, for like Armor Wars, whatever the hell is Armor Wars, right?
Yep.
Like whatever the hell the plan is there, if that's still going forward or whatever, I always thought, yeah, I don't like, we'll watch it, but I'm like, this is the thing I'm least excited about. Now I'm very excited. Now I'm very invested. Like, this, we get to see what the hell is really going on with him. So I'm very curious, you know, if we can get some information, like it's a timeline and everything, and then just see where he goes. And I don't need it to be this like 8-episode thing. 4 would probably be, I feel like, be the sweet spot. But again, something like, don't rush it, please.
Well, this is going to be a movie. They upgraded it to a movie.
Oh, they did? Okay.
Yeah. So I think that they saw the potential around it, and they're like, all right, this is too big for a Disney Plus show.
Yep.
And there were rumors that they're trying to get Robert Downey Jr., but he's too big to put on a Disney Plus show. So, like, maybe they're trying to work that in there somehow. I think it's pretty interesting, because while it does, you know, hurt, again, his moments in Endgame talking with Nebula about the death of Robert Downey Jr., never even knowing that he died there to begin with. And then even going to Captain and the Winter Soldier, his conversation with Sam Wilson about essentially being a black superhero is like all kind of feels like falling on faint ears. You know, they have this like interesting conversation where they're in the Captain American Museum and he comes out early about being named Captain America right after US Agent was being named there, you know, or he was stripped of it.
Oh, you mean in the Winter Soldier? In the okay, got it. In the Falcon and the Winter Soldier.
Did I say Captain and the Winter Soldier?
Yeah. But like that, no, but okay. I wonder though if that, like, part of me thinks that makes sense that happened because, like, maybe what was
it just
said,
doesn't feel as heartfelt, you know what I mean? Because knowing that it's just a scroll underneath it,
but now knowing that it was a scroll underneath it, it makes sense where it's all just friggin' hollow because maybe he was trying to get Walker into that seat,
right? He's kind of create some division or something like that. Yeah. I can see that from there.
I'm interested to see how, like, go. I don't know if I'm going to do it, but going back and looking at all the stuff that Rhodey was involved, that would be a really good YouTube supercut if someone was able to do that. All of these conversations.
Our YouTube brethren, help us out here.
You're welcome, everybody.
Martin Freeman, right? That has to be after Wakanda or after Black Panther, but before Wakanda Forever.
It could be from the first time we saw him.
Well, because he gets shot and he bleeds red and he gets taken back to life. And you know, brought back to life there with the Wakandans and what's her name there? Shuri.
Someone did their research.
Yeah, you know, a little bit there, right? What does this set up for the future of the MCU now with the Skrulls? Because you have this with Olivia Colman now working with Gaia for British intelligence, MI6, which seems to be like a British version of what Val Contessa de La Fontaine is putting together with the Thunderbolts and everything like that. Now you have all these vigilantes going out there trying to kill Skrulls at the word of the president.
That was interesting. Like that evolution was like, wow. Like it makes perfect sense. That was a really good, like the speech is another thing. I know you have that jotted down elsewhere, but the reaction to it was actually perfect.
Yeah. And I liked the montage and everything of like all everyone kind of coming in at once, which makes you wonder, are these vigilantes or are these like black book military units, you know what I mean? Like CIA or kind of like off the book sort of things, or are these like militia, you know, just acting at the word of the television, you know what I mean? So I think that could be, again, how they handle that could be interesting as well. But this is, again, I would hope be gearing towards Secret Wars, because you have all these divided factions now that you have, you know, no, I forget what the term is, but like non-Earth military combatants, I think that might be it, all are considered illegal. So all your Thor people. Why can't I think of that?
As guardians.
Thank you. As guardians, you know, you have all these people now, the Guardians of the Galaxy, who could just be considered outlaws, on Earth. So that could be interesting there. Again, what was Sonya Fallsworth wanting to do with the plans for the Super Skrull machine and working with Gaia to further understand it? This could be, I think, credit to Mac. He brought this up when we did the series finale preview, is that this might be how we get the Fantastic Four. You have all the powers of the Fantastic Four within that machine. You have Korg, which was represented there in the final final battle scene. You have obviously Extremis, that could be the fire. You have Ghost that pops up in there, which could be the phasing going invisible. And then you have the Groot kind of Stretch Armstrong ability there. So that all sets up for the Fantastic Four. Maybe they get hired to work and kind of recreate this machine for a government entity. Something goes awry, they get hit with the powers.
Yeah, that could work.
That seems to be, you know, that's a little twist on the original story, but it kind of stays within the world of the MCU.
That would be an interesting move. I'm actually curious. I wouldn't mind it, but I'm also not a big Fan 4 fan. So, I'm curious.
Last one. What is Vera's research that is so important on Earth?
Couldn't tell you.
What's her deal?
It's a good unanswerable question.
Yeah. Do we think Gravik is dead?
Yeah, I do. Well,
because he has the Extremis.
Well, you know, I don't think so. Now that my first reaction was yeah, but like it's comics.
My initial impression is yes too.
Yeah, but
I don't want him to be there. I want him to be in the fold somehow.
See, but the thing is that like I want him, but like making him dead is also like a good thing. But if you're gonna bring him back, you gotta wait a long time.
Yeah, yeah, you gotta wait a little. But I really liked his performance more so. So I just getting him in there, I think was cool as well. What will age the best from this series?
The writing of Nick Fury was so good. Mm-hmm. Samuel Jackson obviously did a great job. I mean, there's a reason where, like all jokes aside, when you go and accidentally list Nick Fury instead of Samuel L. Jackson as the actor at the beginning of the show, like
it's a compliment.
It's a compliment to how he's portrayed this character. He's done an outstanding job from day one. This doesn't change here, even though there's a huge change with this character. And the thing is, like, we start to see serious flaws with him where he's always had the answers as much as he's like the only human. Aside from like Hawkeye, and I guess Black Widow, in all of this, who's trying to like move all the pieces around, we see the flaws, and on top of that, we get a really good post-blip story from somebody who was blipped, and it was heavy with him. It was really, and then there's also the husband side of it all that we see, and there's just. Different, there's other like dynamics, of course, because he's married to a Skrull that are talked about. So it's a lot of when you talk about like mature stuff in terms of the action in everything and in the torture scenes and whatnot. We also get like mature stuff here when we're talking about like his emotional roller coaster ride.
Sure, and the relationship of that, and there's the obvious allusions to immigration and acceptance and all that stuff, right? Too. So yeah, a lot of adult themes there. Although if we're talking about spending, like having more time spent on the story or the story overall feeling rushed, the first thing I cut from this is the whole Fury backstory of having a love interest in a family. That's the first thing I cut from it.
Hmm.
Although I think it did offer some great things. Like I mentioned, the Fury and Vera talking at the table, the great just performances overall, adding that extra depth, I think is an interesting layer. But ultimately that's where I'm going to cut it, because what I want is a political spy thriller that kind of keeps you guessing and kind of, again, has that paranoid schizophrenic type of feel through it. And this just levels it out too much.
Hmm. Okay. So
not that it was bad, but again, if I had my hands on the final editing bay, that's probably where I'm going.
See, for me too, like with, who is the actress that played Priscilla, Charlaine Woodard. Like I didn't know for a lot of the time, like, can she fully be trusted? I thought she put together a great performance.
She was awesome.
Where like I tend to be of the mind that you have, where it's like, you know, do we always need the love stories? Do we need that kind of stuff? It's such a cliche thing for people to get invested in.
Especially for Nick Fury, who feels, you know, again, like part of what's great about him is the mysteriousness to him.
Mm.
And to kind of get that backstory kind of takes away that mystique a little bit. It's not a huge deal, but that's, you know, I think that's what makes him great.
Here's my thing. I was surprised when it happened like anybody else. And then I was like, okay, how's this going to go? Because I'm generally like, I don't need a love story. But I thought like she was so good. And obviously he's he's just so conflicted and so messed up that it plays into it all. Where I like wouldn't want that. I like many times I would be like, you can take that out. This is one time where I'm not. Feeling that way.
Yeah absolutely. Yeah, and just to echo you said, the performances of Jackson, Mendelsohn, Benadir, Woodard, Clark, Coleman, all of them I thought were awesome. And again, if that's where the majority of the budget went, was to get these actors on board, kudos to them, because it paid off from that aspect. The concept of the harvest, I think that's really interesting. Again, would have loved a flashback scene of them going and actually collecting some of this DNA and what that was actually like, who was on this team. I think that's a very interesting, using the Skrulls to kind of blend in and like act like they're supposed to be there. Very interesting. However, you know, bad job by Nick Fury of combining all of the DNA into one vial. That could have been, you know, you want to spread your eggs around a little bit. So if you get your hands on one, they don't have them all, right?
Yeah, that was interesting choice.
Yeah, very interesting that. But again, I love that idea. And that being like the ultimate weapon there, right?
Yeah, definitely.
How about this? This is a little on the nose here. How about the U.S. staging a false flag incident in an attempt to get into a war with Russia? You talk about like the Falcon and the Winter Soldier being too on the nose for COVID and having to like rearrange the bio weapon release and like everything like that and having to like cover all that up. Like this, I think they actually even mentioned like a couple of Ukraine things that got pulled out too.
Did they?
Or they did bring up Ukraine in this. And I thought, I was like, it's just very weird in the current times that we're in right now to see them, again, doing all of this.
Well, Secret Invasion's timing is also weird, just given what's in the news, too. Like, this, the whole idea.
Oh, with the alien disclosure.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is interesting. Although, you see the guy, you see the general who was doing all of the speaking? Did you see any of those clips?
Is this like... in the past couple days, because
no, it was during the hearing when that was going on last week.
I saw. I think I know who you're talking about.
He's got like a bald head. He's like a military guy, but he actually looks like a reptilian. He kind of looks like an alien. So I'm like, I'm not sure if I can trust this guy too much.
Well, I was at the hotel that I was at this weekend. It was somehow we got stuck on like True TV and there was definitely some paranormal stuff like that was popping up. It's just like everywhere around me between this and that.
Did you feel like somebody's watching you?
Yes.
I always feel like somebody's watching me.
That's why I don't mind doing these shows because it's like, what's the difference?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. There we go. That's some of the stuff that will age the best from this movie, but what will age the worst?
Well, I mean, the finale, we already know that. Whether you have an issue with the CGI or have an issue with the pacing or both, because it doesn't necessarily need to be both. It's just that's not going to go like because the rest of it is good. Again, trending towards an 85 on mine, which also means it could have moved up the scales. It could have been an 87. Heck, it could have been a 90 if they completely landed it. And there were good elements to it, but just didn't do a great job with it, and that doesn't usually bother me as much, so that I feel like that should say something. But the other thing that's not going to age well is viewers' trust in any characters that we see in the MCU going forward. Anybody who's slightly suspect, Skrull, we were already doing it before this.
Yeah, exactly. So now it's going to be interesting. I think my money is also on Justin Hammer if we're talking Armor Wars. I think Sam Rockwell is going to be reprising his role in that. At least that was the early rumor. So if he comes back, he's a Skrull full on. That's at least I want him to be. But I'm with you with the Rush finale. I have President Ritson's militarized, rage-filled statement against all non-Earth military combatants. That little statement that he gave there, which then we talked about that little montage that followed it. The montage was great. The speech was very weird. It seemed very out of character because I think leading up to this, he seemed kind of like a fair and balanced president. I don't know if that was just my interpretation. And then he goes and he's obviously pissed because he's been duped by these Skrulls there and almost killed by him, right? And like almost sending the country into nuclear or the world into nuclear war. But he's quickly forgetting that one of them saved his life.
Yeah.
Or wasn't told that, you know, like it wasn't really discussed about. So you would think he would have some level of understanding. That was his whole point of sacrificing himself for the president was to hope that like, okay, here's like the Skrulls aren't all bad.
That is one of the things for me that was a huge issue with the finale. It's like this guy has seemed so level-headed the whole time. And it's not even that he could have like the writing that could have still held up. You still could have had it where he like issues this whole warning. I think that's fair. It's the way the actor went about it. Unfortunately, he just hadn't set the stage or the writing hadn't set the stage for him to be as irate as he was. And I understand it's a unique situation, but it just didn't feel right.
Yeah. And it doesn't even sound like something a president would say.
Maybe.
Or like a leader would say too. Like it's so aggressive.
Now, if you made him a Skrull, which is what I thought was the case afterwards, and it's like, all right, it's a Skrull.
Then now that's interesting, right? Because he gets into the car at the end, right? And you're kind of seeing from the driver's view from the back seat, and he kind of gets this like weird look. I'm with you on that. It hung on him a little too long for me to think that he's completely clean.
And if he's a Skrull, or if he's dirty in some capacity, or if it's not actually the president we'd seen up to that point, if it's still the same guy and he's dirty, then you should be way better at this than that. It just felt like, but if it was not him, however you want to do that, Skrull or whatever, or somebody else with like a, you know, Mission Impossible mask, then it works. Mm-hmm. Then the finale could age a little bit better, where maybe I bump it up to like maybe an 82.
Okay, maybe an 82. That's a tough critic right there. I'm with you. How about the Drax arm on Gaia? That aged pretty bad.
I mean,
it's the proportion of it all.
That's just the thing. That's the problem. Is like it doesn't look poorly done, like where we've talked about with a like a Venom and Carnage and stuff.
Right,
like that.
Right.
It's just like it was kind of it. Okay, I don't think it was a CGI problem. I think it was whoever decided to okay that was the problem.
No, it looked like it was the actual arm just scaled down. Like they were just able to pull the arm from Drax from a Guardian movie and then drag it over onto her arm. That's what it looked like. And shrink it down to size.
If you had her in Skrull form, maybe it's not as much of an issue. Just saying.
There we go. That's interesting. I like that there.
Looks weird on a human body.
But the inherent problem with this whole Secret Invasion show is that they are dying to be in their own skin. But the only way that us, the viewers, can differentiate them is by being in their human skin. So they're constantly talking in their human skin about how they want to be in their own skin.
That's a really good call.
There's a disconnect there, right?
Yeah, that's a really good call. Because even at the compound, they're like, they did write around it where they're like, the longer you're in the skin that you're trying to like portray, the more comfortable you are, the less likely you are to revert back to it. They did kind of lay it, and it was her that laid it out. So they do have that, but it is interesting, like a paradox.
It is. It is a little bit there. Yeah. How about Sassy Rhodey?
he's
a sassy little Skrull, that Rhodey.
Yes. Yeah. That was that again. Him being like that makes me think even more so. Like that president's a Skrull.
Yeah. Because who's just putting up with that? You know, like he's talking drunk. You know, he's like talking like drunk after drinking Pappy Van Winkle with the president on the or with Fury while talking with the president on that Air Force One. Then you got him talking to whoever that high-ranking woman military official was. He's like, are you taking crazy pills or something like that? Mm. And it's like, no one talks like that.
Yeah. To be clear, I don't think the president was a Skrull till that moment where.
Right. Yeah. He got subbed out somewhere. Yeah.
Yes. It was like a last minute like shift. Sassy Rhodey was very odd. I unfortunately had already seen the spoiler. I know we were suspecting already that he was a Skrull, but like when I saw him giving Nick Fury lip like that, I was like, This feels a little off for Rhodey. Yeah,
everything about him just seemed kind of off. He seemed, again, credit to the performance of him there. Don Cheadle is like he kind of had that sassy girly vibe, that mentality. Like he had a lot of feminine traits about him that he kind of like subtly rolled into his character.
That's right. The character was female Skrull. I forgot about that.
Yeah. That's what I was saying. It's like so sassy. Yeah. How about this? How about the idea that an advanced alien race fresh out of an intergalactic battle with another advanced alien race who used advanced technological spaceships to crash land here, equipped with masking abilities and knowledge of said advanced technology, would sit around 30 years waiting for a new planet from a lowly human? They're very reliant on Nick, just good old regular Nick Fury.
Kind of a fair point.
Like why the series kind of paints them as like helpless when in reality, like they're far like superior in just about everything than humans are. Right.
Yeah. It's like, it's a very fair point. Like I don't understand. You've poked a hole for sure.
And the other one, this is an original thought. I saw this on some reviews here, but when Rhodey, who again, presumably at this point in time is a Skrull at Endgame, goes to kill Thanos in the very beginning, they get a fully inhabitable planet that they can go to. That's gone. It was just him. Right? It was just Thanos there. That in theory, they could go back to like when he's farming and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And he just never takes or she never takes her people there.
Right. Yeah, right.
That's pretty good. I forget where. Maybe that's New Rock Stars. Maybe something like that. But I forget.
Good point.
That's good stuff. Okay, so what age the worst, Nick? I've been waiting for this. You watch the AI intro. You've been very outspoken about the AI intro. Why is this age the worst for you?
I mean, it's always. It's to me.
Well, first, what did you think of it? I'm sorry.
I mean, look, it's like from what I see visually, yeah, sure, it makes sense for this, like the whole, it's fine. Like it is not, if that was done by human hands, I would say I like that. It was, they did a good job with it. But knowing that it's not, and it's done by people saying, I want this, like typing stuff out, basically you or I could do that effectively.
Yeah,
I could, if that was animation, you and I can't do that. Like, I don't know. I'll speak for myself here. As much as maybe I can visualize some stuff creatively, I don't have the muscle mechanics to do that. It is very difficult to do that kind of stuff, and you have to have a certain mind. So to go and have a machine do it, it's meaningless to me, is what it comes down to. That's how I feel about art created by AI, whether it's written word or this. And I'm sure there are other things that will start to pop up along the way. It's meaningless to me. It's just
colors on the screen. Absolutely. I can see it coming to like, I can see it reaching to a point where it's over bleeding into the art. Right. And it's like art needs to have a human emotion to it, a human aspect to it. Right. And it can feel hollow. Like you were saying about writing. I think within this vacuum of this show, it works perfectly for it because it's subtly creeping over. Like we mentioned when all this first came out, right. It's an alien technology that's slowly taking over. And it's slowly creeping its way into human existence there. So I think in that aspect, it's a very like meta type of thing that I think works for it. I think if you were to put it on a larger scale, or if you were to say, I don't know, make the It's Always Sunny intro AI, you know, that doesn't work for me. You know what I mean? Or like any other show. Like I think for a Secret Invasion show, I think it works like that.
I think that's fair. And I think if they had said that coming at it, like before we even saw it, then I would have been fine with it. But the fact that it was, again, one of those things where you've talked about before when it's like, oh, yeah, like we've gotten how many times with James Gunn has explained like Groot stuff. Obviously, we can't understand Groot, so that's a little different. But like when that happens, it's like, yeah, you know, if it's not in the movie, then like what's going on? As much as I like hearing details outside of it. But when you look at when you talk about this, it's like, oh, we made this decision and we're not going to tell you guys till after, we're going to see how you respond. And then we have this response kind of in the can. You know, if everybody's kind of upset, it seems very disingenuous. I do agree with your point though. Like it makes sense for the show. I still don't like it because it's taking jobs from other people. And you can say, oh, like people who started citing like, oh, there's still people who like have to work on this. And I understand like bottom line is all corporations care about, but it's like, it's half of people are losing their jobs.
Right.
And then again, what it comes down to for me is with art, whether it's writing, you know, music, anything like that, like what is being said in this song? Like, remember, there's music that like, you know, is like, you know, I just want party music and whatever. But a lot of times it's like, I want something that's saying something. Needs a voice.
I hear you. I can hear what you're saying there. I just saw a clip of AI play-by-play on the Masters. Someone laid it over some software over the most recent Masters. And it is the most heartless, soulless thing. It's just like Tiger Woods with the shot from, you know, 150 yards away. He's using a 9-iron. Balls up, and then there's just a huge silence while the ball's in the air because it's waiting for it to land so it can calculate the distance to the hole and everything. And it's like, and he's 3 feet from the hole, and that was the clip, you know. So I was like, it's so bad. But what doesn't help it from my point of view are all the play-by-play people who then quote tweet that and says, like, I saw play-by-play is an art form similar to Michelangelo and to, they're comparing themselves to these all-time great artists. And it's like, no, you just talk about sports, you know? And while I agree there, it's an art form. It's the overcorrection, right? It's the pushing it so far to compare yourself to like Michelangelo or Picasso or something like that, where it's like, okay, well, get over yourself a little bit here. You're not helping yourself, you know?
Yeah, you're not going to, like, not too many people are going to feel bad for you when you're going and talking about yourself in that way. But my thing that I just, every time, like, this is the one of the reasons why I, like, there's a lot of, like, I guess, I don't know, is AI, like, a hot button issue, you would say?
Yeah, I would say so.
The reason I don't have a problem talking about AI like that, like a hot button issue, because I normally don't do that kind of stuff, is because this can impact everybody. I don't like. I'm sure there are a few people who like this won't impact in any way, and maybe there are some people who like, you know, they're the ones that run the AI that for until, you know, we get the Terminator, they'll be fine. But like everybody is going to feel the impact of this in some way. And I just don't trust that it's going to be for the positive for the majority of people. So like, yeah, I agree with you, Wes. Like, oh, when someone goes and insults a play-by-play person, they're like, you know, or whatever, they go and they say this thing about their job and how it's like this amazing thing, this gift from God. Like, all right, take it easy, buddy. But at the same time, I know that they're going to be impacted. I'm going to be impacted. You're going to be impacted. Like, more than likely we are, I should say.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. It's my similar thought with, like, the actor's strike. Maybe not so much the writer's strike, but the actor's strike. So these Hollywood actors make so much money and then complain about how little money they get. And while I'm always in favor of millionaires over billionaires, I'm neither of those. To see these people complaining and I'm going about my everyday life, just picking up my lunch pail, my hard hat and going to work. You know what I mean? It's like, all right, get over yourself. You're playing pretend in front of a camera. But in theory, I'm always like pro union because I am the little guy.
And I understand
does that make sense?
No, it totally makes sense. And generally speaking, too, like when we talk about like athletes and stuff, like it's just, like,
yeah, yeah.
I'm generally speaking, I don't like, it's like, okay, like you guys go and figure yourself out. But in this case, like I look at this twofold. One, you have AI, which could take their jobs in some capacity, is absolutely possible. We've heard about that kind of stuff. And two, that them doing this, you know, their whatever their complaints are aside, and without looking into their money and everything, them doing this is more impactful than the writers doing this. So I appreciate them backing the writers.
Bigger name, more attention to it,
They're like, as much as I love talking about the writers and like, especially when we're talking about comics, like actors are way bigger of a deal when it comes
to movies. Bigger reach for sure.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because you say it may not affect anyone right away, but it will, you know, down the road. And it's funny because I think like 4 or 5 years ago when all this talk about like automated trucks for like the shipping industry and everything were going, like all these truckers were going to be losing their job. There was a bunch of like nerdy hipster coders who were saying, well, why don't you just learn to code? Just learn to code, you know, and just all that stuff because they were losing their job. And now all of these coders are losing their jobs out to AI that can be done. You know what I mean? So it's kind of come like full circle. So it's like you got to be careful about who you make fun of because the AI is going to come for you one way or the
other.
This
is why I'm just asking people to just have a little bit of foresight. But this is why it's one of the things I don't like mind. I get annoyed like about it, but like I feel compelled to talk about it when it comes up. It's weird. Hey, I'm not usually like that.
You got to get on your soapbox every now and again and wash up, you know.
I guess this is my thing.
Yeah. Hey, die on that hill. I'm here for it.
Thanks.
Who was the best performance by a side character? I feel like there's a couple of good choices here.
Well, it depends on who you're talking about as side characters. I think it's Sonya Fallsworth, no questions asked.
Yeah, it's Sonya Fallsworth. I think, you know, maybe you don't consider Gravik a side character as like the lead villain.
Yeah,
but he certainly did a great job. But Vera, I think, could be considered a side character.
Yes, I agree.
Who I thought was awesome. But my first choice was with you, was Sonya Fallsworth. I thought, speaking of sass, you played that sassy British woman down to a T. Perfect. Great. I've heard that she's done that in a couple of other type of roles that she's done. So she's kind of used to that. But I liked her just kind of moving around in a superpowered world without any superpowers and just like feeling like a boss.
Her versus
like no fear
versus Julia Louis-Dreyfus. I am very much here for that rivalry in the MCU. So please give me that.
It may not be a rival. They may be on the same team, but my early thought is they're against one another.
I hope they're against one another, but on the same team would be funny. Any way that they're involved together, I'm very much interested in that. Character was well written, and obviously she did a great job. Gravik, if I don't consider him a side character, I mean, he's the main antagonist. If he was a side character, I would put him ahead of Sonya Fallsworth for sure, because he's probably the best performance of this show. I mean, it's him or Nick Fury.
And
Vera was great too. Vera was very good. Like you said, there was a lot of good performances in this.
Yeah, and she has some great depth in there. She adds a lot of layers to the character, quite literally, right? Kind of playing that spy, but also the conflicted wife and lover, and like how do you hurt the one you love the most and all that stuff. So very interesting concepts with that. Who lost the movie?
Rhodey.
Yeah, Rhodey. Rhodey lost a movie. Yeah, but he may come back on the winning side because again, like he's been poorly used or underutilized. Some would say, you know, he's kind of been a bit character this whole time. So this could be his opportunity to kind of flesh out some things a little bit more with him.
Rhodey could actually be part of what will age the best because now, like his stock in the MCU could skyrocket from this show.
Yeah, you're wondering now you're interested in what's going on with Rhodey. Like, how many times have we asked this question?
It could be who won the movie then, too.
Yeah, but right now, he's the clear loser, though. I agree. Yes. But the other one would be comic book fans, just for the fact of the misappropriation of Secret Invasion. Doing that to get, you know, drum up hype or get attention to it. You know, I don't necessarily care, but I can certainly understand feeling duped if you were a lover of that comic book run. And then this is like nothing to it. It's a fancy little trick by Marvel because technically it's not lying. It's they're being factual, but not truthful, right? There's kind of the difference. Like factually, this series did feature an invasion of Skrulls that secretly infiltrated America. So by definition, it was a secret invasion, but it's not the secret invasion that you read from the comic books that had all the popularity and excitement for this series to begin with.
Yeah. It's, I mean, this is where it's tough too. Like, you want to have like every character that was in certain stories, but you know, now we're dealing less with like the Fox issue, obviously, that we had over the years. And then, obviously Sony can still be odd, but this is why, one of the reasons why, like, I love comics is like, I want to have Tony Stark in here. Is it going to mess with the mainline Tony Stark story? No, then who cares? Yeah, he can be in there. Like, fine. Or we can put, like, for big time events, if they're big enough, if they're good enough, some shit can get put on pause. So, that's where, like, that's one of the reasons why I like it so much more than a show or movie form.
Yeah, and you just like the feel of print in your hands. You know, you're an old school guy.
I do have a shirt that someone got me that says, I love the smell of newsprint in the morning.
Ah, very nice, Dan. Look at that old school journo right there.
Yeah.
Who won the movie though? If it wasn't Rhodey, won the movie?
It's Kingsley Ben-Adir.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, question. Absolutely. Yes, breakout performance. I didn't recognize him from anything else. Apparently, he's in the Barbie movie too.
Yes. Yes.
So this totally different. Is a pretty good week for him, though. You know, I could have this series come out, and he, you know, even if the series isn't well received, he's kind of been getting personal kudos as well as being in like the biggest movie in the country right now. So that's we talked about who was it? Jonathan Majors at that moment. Who was the other guy? Was it Oscar Isaac?
He was busy. Yeah, he was. Oh, he had a big
one. Chris Pratt was another one. But yeah, you have all this stuff.
Who's the guy that's? Pedro Pascal.
That's it. Yes, yes, Pedro Pascal. Yeah, with the Last of Us and the Mandalorian. Right.
Yep.
But yep. I mean, you have this kind of timing perfectly. We mentioned this again. A couple people. You have Chris Pratt with Super Mario Brothers, Guardians 3. Yeah. Jonathan Majors. You know, so like, yeah, it all works out. And I think Oscar Isaac too. Right. I mean, he had Across the Spider-Verse and.
Yep.
I guess Dune, but that's further down the road.
Is he in that one too?
Oh, probably not. Actually,
he had Moon Knight. So
and Moon Knight, yeah. But yes, yeah, so all that stuff. Kingsley Ben-Adir, great. Samuel Jackson did a good job as well. Might have been a better suited title if it was just called Fury.
Maybe.
And then maybe you don't piss off the comic book fans like that.
But again, like most people, like it would have. Well, actually, what am I saying? All these scores were like, it just got lambasted on Rotten Tomatoes. Yeah, so I don't know.
Exactly.
I mean, for us, like it didn't need much more. It's just like the, you know.
No, and again, I think we both, I think I can speak for you when I say this, we both probably have adjusted expectations, at least for the Disney Plus shows. Maybe just like, all right, I'm not putting a huge stock into this, although I was excited for this series and liked it for the most part.
I know you've adjusted. I don't know if we're on the same level with that, though. Like, I don't, because I've liked a lot more of the stuff, I think.
That's true.
And I, because again, like the thing where we differ is like you, as much as I like the connective tissue, that is your number one thing with the MCU still, right?
Yeah, just about. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I understand if it's not anymore. So, like, that's where there's been a little bit of like differentiation on our end.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I hear you on that there. So maybe, yeah.
But
yeah, maybe not a changing of the expectation, maybe just a slight recalibration.
I mean, you have in some ways changed your mind at least.
I won't change my mind because I don't have to, because I'm an American.
All right, so that's the Secret Invasion exit survey here. Nick gave it an 80. I gave it an 81. That's an 80 and a half score. That puts us where, Nick, at 32?
Mm-hmm.
No, yeah, 32. I did get that right. 32 out of 41 for our CMM MCU rankings to date. So go watch it on Disney Plus or don't, because it's over and we're just going to be moving forward. Maybe you can just listen to this episode and know everything that you have to know.
Yeah, that's fair.
It's morphin' time.
All right.
Choo-choo, bitches.
So you had a hotel this weekend. Where'd you go?
One of my buddies, who you've met, Matt, got married this past weekend. It was a beautiful ceremony. Nice. Yep. So we
locally
spent,
or where was he?
Yeah, locally in Ipswich. Did all the stuff there. Got there on Friday, had a lovely time at the rehearsal dinner, and then the ceremony. Everything was great. It went perfectly.
Awesome. So, you can't ask for anything. No one embarrassed themselves. No one got too drunk. Yeah. How was the best man speech?
Best man speech was good. Maid of honor speech was good. Both got emotional.
Whose was better?
Well, you see, I know the best man, and obviously I was in the wedding, so like I've known the groom very well. That was really good, and I really enjoyed it. I feel like I gotta go with the maid of honor because there's certain buttons that were like pushed that like got me emotional listening to it. And I don't know her at all. I know the bride, but yeah, I was like, it was very impressive. It was very, very, very well done. So I might give her the slight edge, but it was close.
Now, when you go to weddings, now that you're planning for one and yours is coming up right around the corner, do you look at everything differently?
You know, it's funny as we talked about that going in, and like, there was definitely things that were very helpful. And this was, they did a great job with this wedding. There were a lot of like good things that we're going to be pulling from it for sure.
All the little details, like I would never pay attention to, like the cutlery placed, you know, like the Julia's bridal party was freaking out because the clam chowder crackers, oyster crackers were on the table and that was ruining the vibe of the decor, the vibe of the table there. So she's like, we got to get them off. Well, where do we put them? And there's like all these like other little things. I'm like, I never even thought about it, but Jules and I would talk about that at every wedding leading up to ours. It's like, funny. Oh, they did this. They did this. I don't like this. I like this.
Yeah. That's funny. Yeah. No, it's I think this is the only one where I can say I definitely did that. Cause like my brother, I've been to one other wedding since like we set the date. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't really like actively looking at it. I mean, I didn't notice a lot of stuff in my brother's last year, but yeah, but it was definitely learning some things.
I love it. And you got the second half of The Witcher. So you still got to catch up there.
Didn't get to watch the last episode. We snuck two in. The return was friggin' epic. It was outstanding. But this is supposed to be the end of Henry Cavill's run. Right. So,
right. Yeah.
Like we're kind of dying, like, you know, I want to watch it, but like we needed to recover from the wedding on Sunday, so we didn't get a chance to. But I'm excited to watch that. But what have you been up to since we last convened?
I got out, played a little golf with my old college buddies this weekend, so a nice impromptu round at Cape Cod Country Club. That was very nice. Yeah, just been being a dad. Had our first moment of. Julia was working at her old restaurant, picked up a shift there on Saturday night. So I come in right at 5 o'clock with my mom and Vivian. And she just woke up from a nap. She had just fed, cleaned diaper. She was all ready to go. Right. She usually goes back down like around like 8 o'clock.
Okay.
You know, and that 7:30 time gets to be like the witching hour where it's kind of like she's stirring. It gets kind of cranky. So I was like, great. We have like 2 hours. To get like this dinner out there, this would be great. We'll sit in like a high top area in the bar so that there's some noise to kind of drown her out. You get some white noise in the background that usually helps her out. And then we can be, and Jules can wait on us to see the baby. I can hang out with my mom. We could do all that, right? Table's taken in the bar, so we can't sit there. So we immediately get placed into a quiet dining room, which is not a good spot to be. And this middle-aged couple is sitting right behind us or next to us as we're in a booth. And all the waitresses are coming up to see Vivian, shoving her face, you know, their faces into like the car seat, which just freaks her out because, you know, that's like too much exposure.
Mm-hmm.
So she starts crying. We're in a quiet room. We order drinks. The drinks come. We have to leave because she just won't stop crying. We were there for like 15 or 20 minutes with just me standing outside of the restaurant trying to calm her down. She just completely short-circuited. So that was my first foray into like what would probably be a handful of more, hopefully, maybe less, hopefully, of having to leave a restaurant because of a meltdown. So
sure.
She definitely has my temper tantrums.
Oh, temperament.
Yeah.
There we go. Yeah, that's
good to know.
Not envious of you. That does not sound fun.
No. So yeah, it's all good stuff. That's just the dad life now, you know. Mm-hmm. We ended up ordering Thai food. We tried to make the most of it.
Nice. At least, yeah. But there you go.
But that's it. Yeah. Just golf and dad life.
Sounds like a nice relaxing weekend, other than the restaurant part.
Oh, yeah.
Is
everyone else talking Secret Invasion?
Yeah, this week in the DSG, it's Secret Invasion. We're doing a solicit. PCP is still part of the writer's strike. They actually set the tone for the writer's strike.
They did.
I've heard it both ways. Season 6, episode 5 of Psych, not Secret Invasion, which is a bold move on their part. Mm-hmm, and then for the streamers, Doc is at Backcracker on Twitch. Shime is at Shime Time. And then Dork does their video game playing on the hashtag Dork YouTube page.
Yeah, and as for next week, I think we might have a free play here. We got a couple things in the pipeline that we got to work out here, so that'll be getting ironed out shortly. But I think we might have a free play next week.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So we'll come up with something good for you then.
TBD, your favorite kind of episode.
That's right. Same bat time, same bat place as always, bitches.